I'm going to talk about an experiment that we ran, this design we ran to test particular understanding of a particular security mechanism in verifiable voting system, back in Voting. So this was an experiment that we ran. Morgan Llewellyn is the political scientist that provided that input, and the rest of us were from the technical computing side, so it's one of these, it's my first experience of being involved in this kind of experiment involving exploring how voters, how people actually get on with a particular system. So what I'll do is motivate where this investigation came from. I'll take you through the presentation system. You've seen it in James's talk earlier this afternoon, but I'll take you through the steps, and in particular the various aspects that we need to add in more detail. Right. So it makes sense that although a number of the audience have seen it before and really the different principles, there's also a number of you that would benefit from seeing it. And then I'll talk about the actual experiment we did on trying to elicit users' understanding, and I'll tell you what results we got from that. So, generally speaking, voter verifiable voting systems that we see that have been at this conference and similar conferences proposed for a number of years, they introduce security mechanisms, such as receipts or challenges, to give various verifiability assurances. And these are more complex than the typical experience that voters have when they just go and cast their ballot in the normal way. And their understanding of these mechanisms may impact on how they will actually interact with the system. So, for example, if they're going to verify a ballot, it helps if they understand what that means, what it is that they're actually doing. So how can we investigate whether they do understand this stuff? And so here we're looking at PresaVote split ballot mechanism, which provides vote secrecy, and seeing whether voters understood that. That's because it was PresaVote that we were looking at where this question came up in the first place. So the motivation for this, well, in 2010, as part of the project that James spoke about early on, we had some focus group discussions, which were quite open-ended, where we had various groups, and we were investigating the usability of that prototype of PresaVote. So usability in the sense that voters would have the system explained to them, and then they would be asked to cast a particular vote, they would be asked to record it, they would be asked to do various things, and we just wanted to see how they got on with those tasks. And we also had some discussion around how they felt about the system and what they thought and so on. And almost as a side effect of that, it revealed a lack of understanding or awareness of, for example, that the receipt does not expose the vote. So although we explained, went to some lengths to explain the system and to explain how the principles behind it, and when we explained, we said, any more questions, has everyone got that? And people were really happy that they had got it. The later discussion exposed that actually they haven't got it, even though they said they had. But that's anecdotal, so a number of them did get it, but some would say later on, but then how do I look up how I actually voted for this particular thing? Surely there's no point having this unless I tell them how I voted. Why would that be? Well, we can speculate on why they may not understand it. We use the word received for what they take away with them, and maybe that gives an expectation of somebody who's not listening very carefully or not thinking very hard about it, that the receipt shows what it's actually received for, just without thinking very much. Maybe our explanations weren't as good as we thought they were, or maybe they have genuine difficulty in understanding the principle. So it wasn't clear. And there's a paper from our EVO, Requirements Engineering for Electoral Voters in 2011, that talks about those focus group discussions. So so I'm not going to go into that here. But that was the background for us worrying about whether voters really did understand. So before I go into the actual experiment and the actual thing that we designed, I'll take you through Presto Voce, first of all. So I apologise to those of you who already know inside out and so on, but maybe you can also give me feedback on whether the explanation is good enough. Oh, so one thing I should say is that, of course, in the course of doing research and designing the system, the secrecy is completely obvious to people that have been working on it for a number of years, of course. It's quite hard to put ourselves in the minds of people that haven't actually come across it before. So Presto Voce, the voter verifiable system, Peter came up with it a number of years ago. It provides verifiability, so voters, independent checkers can verify various stages of the election. It provides integrity, so the information that is provided by the various stages gives evidence that can be independently checked, and that provides evidence that the result is correct. Check that the result is correct, and you don't have to trust that the system has done the right thing, because you can audit it and check that the system has done the right thing. Okay, there's also privacy. You have to trust some elements of the system if you're going to believe that you have privacy, because the system collectively has to hold your vote, but generally it aims to minimise it. And I should also emphasise it's a polling place scheme, so it's not an internet scheme, it's run under controlled conditions in a polling place, and so there are various procedures that voters go through when they pass in their vote. So it's in a controlled environment. So to remind you of what you've already heard, the candidates on a ballot form are presented in a random order. So different ballot forms will have different orders. So here's a ballot form with the candidates in a particular order, or you may be given a ballot form with the candidates in a different order, and so on. So different ballot forms will have the candidates in different orders. And when you vote, you'll be given one of these. You can't predict beforehand what the order will be. Okay, so the order of these candidates is right. So then the way that you vote, with Presto Voce, you take the particular ballot form that you've been given, and you find the candidate that you want to cast a vote for, so in this case it's Crystal, and you put... and you mark an X in the particular place that you want to that you want against your candidate. Okay, now there's also a version of this where you can cast your preferences. Okay, in the version that James was talking about with Australia, you would cast 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 with preferences against the candidates you wanted to run. Okay, then you separate the two halves, the left hand side and right hand side. You destroy the left-hand side, there's the trigger, so the list of names is no longer needed and that has to be destroyed. And what you're left with is a receipt. The receipt is scanned into the system, so this is the point at which it's provided into the system, so this is now the vote that's being cast. And then the voter takes this home. The voter takes that home and then is their receipt.
So is that telling you the thing down there, does that tell you order to be, what tells the scanner what the order was? The thing
about it. Okay, so the scanner itself won't know what the order is. What's it? Here at the bottom is a ciphertext that encodes the order that was on the left.
So if two people have the same order, they get the same ciphertext?
No, they wouldn't have the same ciphertext, even with the same okay. Order. So each ciphertext would be unique.
Okay.
So the voter takes the receipt home, and then later on they will check it against the web order. I'll talk about that in a minute. So here's the kind of explanation that I'm trying to give. Now, doesn't the receipt show how you voted? So the receipt here, it's got the ciphertext, but you can't, the voters Anyone else without the without key can't put that sample text, they can't get the list of names on it. So doesn't it show how you voted? Well, it was a vote for Crystal. Here is the actual left-hand side. But if it had been a different left-hand side, it could have been a vote for Diane, or it could have been a vote for Alice, or it could have been a vote for Elaine, and so on. So depending on what the left-hand side was, that same receipt could have been a vote for anyone. So that's the key reason why the receipt was not shown and voted. The receipt could be a vote for anyone, depending on what the left-hand side was. Yeah?
You really need to say the same receipt because the ciphertext at the bottom is different.
That's a good point. So the certain point is the ciphertext can't be deciphered by somebody who doesn't have a key. So an arbitrary person who can't decrypt this doesn't know which left-hand side it actually went for. That is actually a vote for Crystal. Because that's what the ciphertext will be encrypted. But only somebody with a key to be encrypted could know that. So without that could, they can't tell that this is not consistent with that left-hand side.
It's indistinguishable.
It's interesting, that's the word I'm using, indistinguishable. Okay, there's also this audit step. So a voter may want to check that these names were in the, it really do correspond to this ciphertext, that the system is going to be correct. So voters may want to confirm the ballot form mistake, audit the ballot form mistake. So to check the printed list of candidates matches the ciphertext. So they can ask to have this audited, which would have this decrypted, instead of casting a vote on it. And then we have it's decrypted to 42531, which is the list of names. So that audit shows that this was correctly. So we have a cut and choose mechanism where a ballot form can either be audited, check that it's been correctly constructed, or it can be used to vote on. Of course, now it's been deciphered, it can't be used to vote on because then the vote of the receipt would be away.
But it obviously doesn't show your vote, so that's good.
Oh, when you do this audit, you don't cast a vote. You're just showing that the ballot form has been corrected. So that's the choice that voters have. They do a number of these audits, and then they can cast their vote. And when you cast their vote, that goes into the system. So then all the votes that are cast are published on this public web bulletin board here. So all of the votes that have been received by the system are visible and are up there. And again, earlier on in the day, we had a discussion about how good we have this public bulletin board, how in practice, but there's a way of publishing all of the votes that have been received. And then the voter who has their particular receipt can check that it does appear on the bulletin board in that particular, with the X in the right place. The vote that they've cast matches what is on the public record as the information that have been received by the system.
Well, then they can take their auditing thing and match up with that and improve something how they voted.
Well, at the moment, this here is non-decrypted. So these are all the votes which have got the X in the right place, but it still has the ciphertext. So this, even on the bulletin board, so far, hasn't yet safe in that vote is for. So you're wondering, well, how's it going to decrypt that? I'll explain that without being way into this. So. There's one step that I haven't explained yet. So published votes that are cast, then the votes will actually go through in what's called a mixnet, where the votes will be mixed up. So the resulting votes that come out of still encrypted are not linked to the input votes, so they're not linked to the recipients. And then those votes, once they've been mixed and separated, so you can't match them to the inputs, can then be decrypted. And they will then be published, and all of those steps are publicly verified.
Is there
just a quick note, I'm getting a bit off top of the talk here, but just to completely set something called re-encryption. MixNet will take a number of ciphertexts that are here, and a particular server will reorder them, or commute them, and re-encrypt, which means it has the same information but the ciphertext looks different. And then a second server will do that again, and a third server and a fourth solution. Each of these will mix up the votes and do re-encryption. So these look different to these. So it's got the same information, but it's in a different form. So that's re-encryption. They don't publish what the links are, but the fact that these links, the fact that it's done that correctly, can be checked. And there are items with various proofs of shuffles, proof that you've done the re-encryption and shuffles, so the set of encrypted values is not changed in one step. And those proofs can be checked. So what you end up with is a set of ciphertexts here, which you can't look at that one and say which of these it corresponded to. So then these can be encrypted and those can be. So the final slide just sums all this up. You have the voters that cast their votes, we then end up with a set of encrypted votes. Those are verified by the voters using their receipts. That means the set of encrypted votes matches what they passed. The encrypted votes are shuffled to MixNet, and those proofs can be checked. And then the encrypted votes can be decrypted and encrypted, and that can be checked. So you have what's called end-to-end verifying. So that's the Presovote system. That's the principles of the design behind the system that's being used in Victoria. So if we get to...
So I got the impression that what you were doing us through was...
You're saying this.
I got the impression that what you just ran through was roughly what you gave to the guinea pigs in the next election. Is that right? Or did it seem more involved?
When you say, you mean in the
experiment?
Okay, so what I should say, so in the experiment, I'll come to that, but in the experiment we didn't tell them any of that.
Okay.
In the focus groups, we told them, not with the presentation, it was on the round table, but we gave them an explanation of the principles of why, of, you know, when you tear it in half, what happens and why it might have to correspond to that was in focus groups, so they did get some kind of explanation.
Okay.
In the experiment, they did get some.
And so I asked us for feedback on it. Presentation, which is the impression that that's the way you represented it.
Oh, no, no, not at all. No,
I'm not sure.
Okay, we've got another thing that came out of the post, which is, and is also coming out of the miles that they're doing, is that voters are able to cast votes, are able to use the system to actually cast a vote that they need to cast. So in terms of being able to follow the steps and mark the X in the right place and do these things, they are able to do that. So why is it important whether they understand the principle? As long as they can do what they should be doing, isn't that fine? Well, if the voters think the receipt does give away how they're voting, or if they're unsure whether it gives away how they're voting, they may do some things differently. So they may say, well, I don't want this evidence of how they're voting. Secret. So we can destroy this receipt as soon as I can, rather than hold on to it and check it against the bulletin board later. Okay, so then we won't get the audits on the bulletin board that we need. We need a fair portion of audits on the bulletin board, so that if the bulletin board is changing any votes or dropping any votes, then that will be picked up by people doing audits. So no voters, or very, very few voters, actually do these audits, and that undermines the security of the verifying bulletin board. Even if they're not going to be bothered to do it themselves, you know, we might be able to hand it to a friend or to somebody that might do it on their behalf. Just check that their receipt matches what's on the bulletin board. They could be susceptible to what I term bluff coercion. So I want you to vote for my candidate. If you think that the receipt might give away having voted, I say vote for my candidate and you think you'll receive it. And I will check that you did what I said. And if you're not confident that the receipt can't, that I can't do that, then you may still be susceptible to that. They might decide that this is all too, you know, that these things are all too risky, so they're just not going to vote. That's the safest option. And we certainly don't want that as an outcome. So it's important that, it's important where the voters understand, and really it's important that the voters do understand. So once we painted this idea of thinking, well, we really want to check out whether this is a small minority that they understand or that haven't been thought about too hard, or whether there's something more systematic going on. So how do we actually investigate whether people really do understand whether they get this? It's not enough to explain it to them and then say, do you understand? So maybe you could ask some questions, but what we decided to do was design a kind of economic-style game where participants will make choices in this game. And the idea is they'll make rational choices aiming to maximize their return. So in an economic-style game, they'll make choices that they perceive to be in their own best interest. And you encourage that by giving them financial rewards. They're actually making money out of the choices. And in particular, what we want to do is to link their behaviour, which we can observe, which we can measure, to their understanding. So their understanding is not directly observable, it's harder to actually really pin down what their understanding is. But if we can say, we've designed a game so that if they believe the receipt gives nothing away, then they'll make one particular choice. If they believe the receipt may give information away, the vote, then they'll make the other choice. So then we'll have a choice that they will make depending on which of these they believe. Okay, because they're acting in their own best interest. If they're not sure, what to believe, they may vary between these two choices. But it's not quite clear what they're thinking if they vary. It seems that they're not really very confident in what they're doing.
Well, it seems like that's a pretty simple question just to ask directly. Do you think that this is giving away your vote, or do you think it's not? Would that be simply participant? Would you recommend it?
This is an indirect measure, but it seems that people maybe think they understand when they get, or whether
I just explained to you that you know really well. Do you think that this is what you receive tells please can you tell from your receipt how to vote?
But it's not just about the crypto, right? Because it's also your trust in the officials, right? Because if on your bluff coercion example, for example, you know, somebody says, you know, give me a receipt and I can tell you what, because I've got a guy at the inside who's willing to share the key with me. You know, it's not just trusting the crypto design, trusting the people who are managing the secret keys as well.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's more in that than just that particular piece. But first of all, it was just a general that they thought the receipt was really good in a way. There was enough information just on the receipt entities, but even if they can't really open crypto.
Can you explain the crypto and say that you're assuming that they can't do crypto, or are you saying you agree? Or you have to also judge on
it? You need more about it.
You can explain it more if you do.
So in the beginning, there isn't crypto.
Minus you.
Why are we going on?
we got rid of the onion, so that there's no onion.
Okay, so I should say, first of all, this is not intended to be a simulation of an actual election. Okay, so what we're doing is setting up a game that's involving these ballots that is going to elicit whether people have this understanding or not. Just on the principle of whether coming away with the receipt, which has got an X on it, actually gives away how they come. So, you know, this is there's all sorts of other things going on in the real world, in a real election, that are much more complex than this. We've tried to strip it down to the bare essentials, really just testing your understanding of this very straightforward principle that that I hope by now with my explanation is clear to everyone in the room, but which seems to be not clear to people when they first came across. We emphasise to participants that it is an economic style thing, so there isn't anything going on behind the scenes where we're pulling strings or doing things different to what we've told them. It really is from the moment they have to follow a particular strategy based on their understanding of the rules. And we took care with the terminology not to bias their understanding. So what we actually wanted to do was just show them, describe a particular system, but not talk about the security or the privacy of these, just see whether they could understand that just from the description. So we were trying to be very careful not to to bias their understanding. So let me show you today. So you've got a ballot form in front of you. So this is a ballot form that's simpler than the Preservatio one that I showed you before, because it doesn't even have any cryptography on it. It does have a code number on it, but we needed that because we do need some way of tracking and working out what votes are for against a particular ballot form. So if you look at your neighbours, you'll see that they're in a different order and so on. Each part, so what's going to happen in the game is that it's going to go in two steps. There's going to be a step where they cast a vote, and there's going to be a step where they try and select what other people voted for. And what we did at the beginning was just explain the payoff and show them this form. So we did not, and we told them that these orders were going to be, the list of candidates was going to be in a random order, and they're going to be different on different ballots. So we explained that aspect to them. These are going to be randomised in random order, but we didn't explain or didn't try and persuade them that there was what the consequences of that were. So then what we said is what they have to do is they are given one of these ballot forms and they cast a vote, which is to mark an X. They will separate the two halves, they'll shred the names, and they will submit the remaining half as their receipt. So that's going to be step one, is that they will cast a vote one of these times. And then they'll also need to decide, because of what's going on in step two, whether they're happy for other people to see their receipt, to see their right hand one. Okay, so they will need to decide whether they're happy for the other participants in this game to actually see their receipt. Okay, so that's always post or not post. Options. So as well as passing a particular vote, they'll say yes, I'm happy for people to see, or no, I'm happy for, or no, I'm not happy for people to see. Okay, so here's a vote for capital. Okay, so here's a vote, they will mark an X in a post if they're happy for other participants to see that, and they'll mark an X in a not post if people are not happy. And they're not happy for other people to see. So that's step one. They submit something that looks like this. So then step two, for each vote cast, participants will now select who they think that vote was for. Okay, so the way we did this, the mechanics of doing this, we had these handsets that we use in lectures where for multiple choice questions, we put a number of buttons on, and we have questions saying, please select who you think ballot 101 was for. And they press A, B, C, B, or E, and they've selected one of these five candidates. So we say, this is who I think that particular ballot was for. Okay, participants don't know which of them cast that vote. So they don't even know which of the others in the room have ballot 101, so they will mix up as well. So they can't psychologically say, well, she's married someone called Ben, so it's likely she chose Ben, or anything like that. It's purely all they have is ballot 101. Okay, they have nothing to go on except possibly the postage receipt. So we cycled through these. So ballot 101, let's say that was the post, so they have this question which they all have to answer. And that said post, so we've got an X hit. So they all see that and then make their selection. And then we go through 102. The 102 decide not to post, so they don't see anything. And they make their selection. This is why we're very careful not to use the word guess. Even though it's obvious that all they can do is guess. We will say make your selection, and you have this, which you can use if you want to use it. And then back on 3, right to one page. So we would go through this. Etc. Okay, so then the payoff.
No post means that it's not public, but also it's not accessible for the same voter.
It's
so
not accessible for the same voter?
Yeah, for instance, it's not something that you are restricting to the same voter. You say it's not public, and it's not possible to check the receipt.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So this is, we're not really putting... Yeah, it's for the game, they don't need to see it. It's not, they can't, they also can't check it. So they don't hold on to the receipt. This is actually because they don't need it anymore. We're not simulating the whole process of the election. We're just looking at the very fast and holding on to the receipt aspect of that. So they've got no reason to need to hold on to that. We can, they might have to guess their own and get a payoff for that. So I haven't told you what the payoffs are yet. So if you post, then you get £1 for posting. Okay, that's about $1.50 that we calculate. If you decide not to post, then you don't get anything. Okay, so you have a choice to make here, where there's a payoff if you post, and there's no payoff if you don't post. And then when you're in the game where you're trying to select how many people have voted, there are two roles that you're in. One is where you're making a selection against other people, and every time you make a correct selection against what someone else voted, you will get 15 pence. Okay, for each correct selection of both of those cards. Okay, so you'll get some of those just by chance. On the other hand, if someone else made the correct selection against your vote, then you lose 15 pence. Okay, so you actually lose money where other people guess correctly against your vote. So this is what we spent some time talking through the payoffs. And again, we had to rig it so that somebody who chooses to post, the example gave them a 50p payoff, and if they chose not to post, the example gave them a 50p payoff as well, just again not to bias them. But of course, they had to get more guesses correct, selections correct. Okay, so that's the payoffs system here.
Hence, the subject wind up they did it.
In principle, the subject couldn't wind up. They started off their competition state was £10, and in fact, we guaranteed that they would leave with £10. I think somebody would be able to less than that. We'll get that payoff for £10. They're just wind up. So the principle behind this design, linking behaviour to understanding, what we wanted is, so first of all, to all the left, we wanted participants will guess at your choice, your vote, irrespective of whether you post. Okay, so we had some discussion, well, if I don't post, then maybe people can't even guess. We may have some very risk-averse people who don't want others even attempting to guess a bit, so they might have someone on those grounds. So posting doesn't affect whether other people could guess, they will always guess. The only difference is that they can see your receipt when they're making their guess, their selection. So if you think that your receipt will help some of them, then you expect to lose money because you expect there to be more correct guesses against you than the pound that you'll get. So it's calibrated so that you wouldn't need to get many correct guesses against you to outweigh that. So even if you're not quite sure, you might think, well, like some of these people in this room and further than me, but can see that work out, even though I can't figure it out. So if you're doubtful about that, then you may still decide not to place. Okay? If you think it makes no difference, if you can see that it makes no difference, then of course you will post, and you might as well take a pound personally because it's just a free one pound. The rest of it is randomized at the moment, you might as well get that. So that's chaos, and that's the idea of how we link the behavior to their understanding of what information the receiver is. So that's where the calibration came from. You know, we want the amount of first of all be big enough, and to be big enough that somebody wouldn't just throw that away, you know, given the effort of turning out things, the function to run through this, and you know, the incentives go away for some money. That's a big enough incentive not to just say, well, I'm crazy because I'm bored here. So the value of the correct guess is large enough for several correct guesses against the participant. Would outweigh the value of the patient. We also want it to be large enough that we would get some random, some fluctuations where some feedback, I'll talk about it, it might be anomalous in terms of people's chaos depending on what they do or not. So then what we wanted to do is run the game for several rounds. So again, this is not what happens in the real direction. The reason for that is, first of all, the rules take a bit of their usage, so there might be an initial period of a round or two where people are still figuring out and stepping through the rules of the game and understanding what's going on with the posting and the guessing and trying to figure out, you know, looking at these receipts and trying to figure out how can I tell what this voted for with the motion that I've got. And you know, we thought that there might be some convergence on people gradually realizing that it doesn't do it just by playing the game. So it's allowed to understand the rules, to allow us to develop their strategy. We expected stabilization after around 5 or 6 rounds, where people would be settled into what they wanted to do. Yes, so they had an initial stake of £10, and final payoffs turned out to be between £20 and £50. It seems to be going ready for an hour and a half sponsor. Okay, feedback. We also wondered whether we should give feedback between the rounds on how the strategies were doing. Because one possibility is you just run this a number of times without any feedback, or you could give payoff, you could tell each participant what their payoff was from that round. You could post up, you know, you could say this is what each participant has got and this is, you know, whether or not they're posting. What we decided to do was give the average payoff for the posting group and for the non-posting group at the decision. So for example, in this round, the average payoff for the posting group was 83 pence, and the average payoff for the non-posting group was 50 pence. So we would report, that's what we decided to report after each round. So then they could see what was happening across these two groups. And almost all rounds, all except one, had the posting group average payoff higher than the non-posting group. Okay, so in terms of the participants, we got them mostly by email. They were mostly postgrad students and university staff, so it was mostly from within the university. This was an initial experiment just to see essentially whether we were doing right, whether the data was going to be work. This is what they were told. And there were 12 participants in each session. So there's a group of 12, so they make 12 guesses, but we don't give people time to guess what they've done. So in terms of the results, what we've got across the 5 sessions, there were 60 participants then. The first one, we were still getting the hang of the mechanics of it, so we couldn't run it for more than 90 minutes, because we promised them that. We had 5 rounds, the others went 6 rounds. We had about 2/3, or 62%, always posted. So you could see a number of the audience got it immediately and just thought it was funny and then resigned themselves to be bored for an hour and a half and doing random guessing and posting it. I'm just collecting them. Okay. There were 2 participants that never posted it, that were just not going to post under any conditions, even though they could see that, you know, the group, the average reward for posting was generally higher than the average reward for non-posting. Then there were about 6 that decided not to post 2 times or 3 times, and there was about 6 that decided not to post once. So the way we've broken this down is you could say people that were completely consistent across all the rounds were pretty confident of how they felt about it. Okay, so you have people that always posted, We say, set a high comprehension and a high certainty, and what they thought was a high understanding and they were very confident. They never posted they had a low comprehension, but they had a high certainty that they understood the extent, because they were absolutely determined whatever the answers were. Or whatever the feedback was. In terms of low certainty, there were some that usually posted. There wasn't anyone that decided that didn't post more than they did. And when we look at it by round, this is where we were expecting or wondering whether we would see a trend. You kind of look at the numbers that posted, 87% posted in the first round, 82% in the second round. This is across all of them. Then rounds 5 and 6 seem to have more, typically there's one that wasn't posting by then. Actually the trend here is not statistically significant. Maybe our sample was big enough, or maybe there isn't. That's a good trend that people generally do it. Earlier on, but there was a high posting rate throughout. So, in terms of what conclusions we can draw from this, from what we've seen, the majority do seem to get it straight away. But if you get it, even without an explicit explanation of why you get any of it. So I think our initial worries that, from focus groups, that maybe it was harder to understand were unfounded, probably more people not thinking about what they were saying. The majority, about two-thirds, seem to get it straight away. Most of the rest appear to comprehend, but with less certainty, they were kind of occasionally not posting because they obviously weren't entirely sure. Possibly they just saw the way the payoffs were going and thought a rational thing to do is say, well, I've really got no idea what's going on here. Those guys seem to be doing better, so I'll join them. Anecdotally, the more recently, the use of trials in Victoria, from what Craig tells me, is that either the voters get it, they say they can see why it works and that, or they're not worried about it. They're happy to trust the authorities in the sense that when the authorities say, take it from us, this works, they're happy to believe that. So they're not worried about it. There are people who are looking at this thinking, I'm really not sure about it. So that's the conclusion that we've got from this particular exam. So there is interest, I think particularly that's in the there is interest in doing some possible further experiments. There's a number of ways that this can go. We could provide different feedback, possibly no feedback, possibly telling people what their individual payouts are. Now, an individual might find that on one round where they post, their payout is less than another round where they didn't. Just by fluctuations, and also we can see whether the participants are controlling the money, if you like, or whether they're actually understanding it, or maybe they get no feedback at all. We could try giving an explanation of the split ballot before the game, especially explaining why it works. But then we're into this issue of, well, are they doing it because they really understand, or just because they believe the person giving the explanation? Maybe we should interview participants after the game about the reason for making their choice. And ask them what they do understand. We could possibly look at a wider cross section of the population. So we were restricted to universities, were mostly postgrads, and some university admin staff. Possibly looking at understanding our relevance of the system. So they may be interested whether people understand why they might want to audit. There's a number of other possible experiments that we could run, but I think from my point of view, set my mind that for us, generally, people are comfortable with the principles that we have. So I think I'll stop there.
Sure, I've got one. And it's sort of building on Ron's question from earlier and with possible further experiment. At best, what you're learning here is how much the subjects think their peers can determine. But the case that we may be more interested in the election scenario is what can officials determine? And the parallel may be, what if the experimenters were guessing? would the subjects be more suspicious, more reluctant in that case?
Yeah, no, that's a very good a very good point. And I guess that would be hard to set up. Obviously,
yeah, of course.
Because we have to calculate the payoffs in real time.
Indeed.
And then you're going to get to the question of whether they trust the crypto and who's got the keys and whether they can believe it. Because they can't see it, you know, whether it's been one of the ways they've said it.
Exactly.
We did have discussions early on about whether we should have these kind of mysterious barcodes also on those ballot forms, just to worry people. Or, because you know, the real rules do have this crypto, but we don't really talk about it. Just don't worry about this. It's just what we I think that would be a different kind of experiment.
Indeed.
Yeah. Have you got any ideas for that experiment?
Just curious about just seeking some clarification on the structure of the payouts here. Now, is it I lose 50 cents for each time that someone, like for each person that guesses mine, or is it just if anyone guesses mine at all, I'm out 50?
It's for each one.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, I was just curious, because if it wasn't that case, then that made a very strong motivation for me to sell my vote. Because if I only lost 50 cents, but I could generate 50 cents for everyone else that was in on it, then I could be like, okay, mine's going to be like the little X with this kind of squiggle on it. I want half of everything that you get from this person that's running this. But okay, thanks. Or so you think. So you would hope.
Okay. I'm sitting here doing some arts and crafts work, creating a somewhat simplified prêt-à-voter ballot that has no identifying numbers on the top or the bottom, because the game when played with this ballot, of course, is really obviously a fair game, because it's just a guess. There's no identifying numbers here. If I split it in half, there is no information connecting this to that. And, fingerprints. Fingerprints off paper are difficult to take, although this paper has a nice, good shine to it. The question is whether you could manipulate the experiment by having one ringer among the subjects who accidentally lets drop that they're a computer science major and that they understand these kind of things. Would this change things? Because, I mean, the real mystery with prêt-à-voter to the average voter is how the election office can figure out, can possibly know how you voted. The election office claims to know how you voted. But can they really figure it out, or are they really just making up the numbers and announcing the results? So I think manipulating the experiment like that would be really interesting. Or having the little random numbers up here not be so random, having the last digit give you the permutation, just a rollover permutation, a digit between 0 and 5 is sufficient, so that the one person who claims to be a computer science major would consistently guess everyone correctly.
That's because you risked it.
Well, feedback on whether their guesses were correct or not. We only gave feedback on the average payoff. We didn't say, well, this one actually was for failing. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, but
there could have been cheating.
So, yeah, but well, we have said it past the ethics committee that sort of comes to
So, have you asked any of them to explain why do I have to tear this thing apart and shred one half and believe that you can decrypt this thing, and why that's better than just marking who I want to vote for and dropping it in a box? I mean, the part I think you're going to have trouble selling to voters is not that the receipt can actually decode that. It's why do I have to do all this extra stuff as opposed to just marking a piece of paper and dropping it in a box? That's where the real leverage is.
That with my vote last November by voting in one of the uncontested or one of the races I didn't care about for my seventh grade girlfriend, and I found my vote is in the cast vote record.
Because there was only one vote, or because it was
there was only one vote for that person, almost guaranteed.